free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net, where you can find a list of past guests, download those interviews, see who's scheduled for upcoming shows, and if you're listening live, you can see the call-in numbers. We're joined this evening, June 29, 2009, by Sir Charles Schultz of Xenotech Research. Sir Charles Schultz has been involved with Martin Marietta Aerospace for 10 years, weapon systems and computer-based automated test equipment. He wrote the nuclear EMP test software for Pershing 2 missile systems, worked on the Patriot, Copperhead tank killer, and advanced attack helicopter systems. Tonight, though, we're not going to be talking about weapon systems. We're going to be talking about principles of space peace and Earth solar and communicating solar power from space to Earth. Quite a lot of technology we'll be covering. He was recently on Coast to Coast. Listen to that show, two-hour program. We're going to try and squeeze everything into 1 hour tonight. Sir Charles, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be back on.
Yeah, we had you on in January of 2008 talking about your Fresnel lens solar technology. How does this technology, the pod system that you have, compare to what you were doing back then?
Well, back then, we concentrated on a very large system, so we could power businesses and homes very effectively with effectively a 6,000-watt output, and we would be generating electrical power and heat in the form of hot water, which could be used for radiant heating and for just heating your regular water for usage. This is a relative of that. It's a derivative, actually, and it uses a slightly different technology. And basically, we use the Fresnel lenses to gather and concentrate the sunlight to power it, and the power pods that we're going to be producing will convert that to electrical power for you.
Okay. And when you say electrical power, how many watts are we talking about?
The power pods are generally rated at right around 500 watts for the first ones we offer. And when we get the doors open on our new facility here, we're going to be producing them in roughly 6 months.
And what would this look like in terms of, is it going to sit on the roof, going to sit on the, by the garage? Where is this going to be located on the home?
It could be located anywhere you want, and if you have plenty of spare land, you could actually set these up as a power farm and sell back to the utilities. It will basically be a sun-tracking Fresnel lens. The pod is a cylindrical object about 10 inches in diameter and about 10 inches deep, and it will be located at the focus of the lens.
So a pod, each pod is a tracking unit that follows the sun from east to west as it comes across during the day and then reorients the next day. And so this is a moving system, so maybe the roof would not be the best place for it?
Well, you know, we can actually get pretty short focal length lenses really cheaply. So you could locate it on a rooftop, and particularly out here in the southwest where I am presently, there are a lot of flat-top buildings which have a parapet along the outside, and this will actually act to your advantage. It can hide a lot of the hardware from the neighbors.
Okay. And 500-watt system, is this going to be a modular system that each system produces solar or grid-compatible energy, or are you going to have one inverter system for the entire apparatus or per unit?
Well, actually, you'll treat it just the same way you do solar photovoltaic panels. It is a modular system. You can add as many as you need up to the limits of the inverter module, and you wire them all in, and there's an input for each unit that you add. So you'll purchase a standard inverter unit that these will hook to, and you can hook up to like 5 to 10 of them from 1 to 10 units, depending on your needs. So if you feel the need to add another unit, that's very easy to do. It is modular, and you plug it right into the inverter, and AC power comes out the other end.
Okay. And how much do you think these 500-watt systems are going to cost, and what's the return on investment going to be?
The initial cost of the things is going to be right around $2 a watt. And once we ramp up our production and we're able to get large quantities out, we're hoping to hit $1 a watt with these things. And, you know, the return on investment at $1 a watt is going to be 3 to 5 years. And when you compare that to photovoltaic panels, that's very favorable.
Yeah. I know in the solar industry they're always shooting for the dollar per watt benchmark, and so if you're getting to that with some mass production, that's pretty good. And you're looking at having your first systems available when?
In roughly 6 months. Right now we're setting the factory up in the Truth or Consequences, New Mexico region, and the reason for that is we're right near the spaceport. And as I mentioned to you a little earlier, we have a project going on with orbital solar power, and this is going to play a part in that as well. So being near the spaceport was a necessity. But for the time we get our doors open in this area, we plan on a six-month release date.
Yeah, I saw in the news, in fact, it's in my hopper to put in our news, that Spaceport America has broken ground. This is in New Mexico. It's the same one you're talking about, right?
That's correct. I was there for the official groundbreaking on the 19th, and it was quite an exciting event. We had the Governor Richardson here. We had the President of Virgin Galactic, Will Whitehorn, who spoke, and Alan Lockheed spoke, and a number of other people. So it was a very festive occasion and actually a very hopeful one. A lot of people are looking forward to this because of the jobs it'll bring to the area and the great improvement in the economy it'll bring.
That was by invitation only, so you were able to squeeze into that.
Yes, indeed. I and my assistant got in and got some good pictures of everything and met a lot of people. And fortunately, there are a lot of people that I did know, and it was quite the event. I enjoyed it immensely.
Now, tell us, a spaceport, what is the purpose of it? I mean, obviously, spaceport, we're talking about a landing pad, so to speak, between Earth and space. And this is a commercial, meaning non-governmental, ability to go back and forth between space, including tourism and whatnot. Maybe just give us a briefing about what that's all about.
Well, certainly. The spaceport is a commercial venture, non-government, and one of the major users of the spaceport will be Virgin Galactic for some of their tourism flights. And there will also be other users as well. I know that Armadillo Aerospace has done some things out here, and X-Corp has. This is going to be a place where anybody who needs to launch something will basically be able to do it. And keep in mind that the White Knight 2, the carrier vehicle for the space tourism flights, is also having a module built for it that will allow it to launch satellites. So we'll be able to do just about any commercial operation here from the spaceport, and I'm looking forward to using it myself for some of the things we're doing.
Now, yeah, and launching a solar space project, yours is this space island group that you're negotiating with to provide some components for that.
The Space Island Group and another one, SolarN, both companies have received permission to put pilot orbital solar power stations up, and the Space Island Group plan calls for a small pilot model that will go up in October of 2010. So we're negotiating the technologies and hardware I'll be providing, and we're doing a little bit of work right now to hammer out the details. And we expect that by 2012, we'll have a 1 gigawatt satellite in orbit that'll beam power to subscribers on the ground, totally powered by solar energy.
You were telling me that this transmission of power is not going to be the first time that large levels of power are being transmitted. Tell me about some other stuff that's going on already.
Yes, as a matter of fact, in Japan, I believe it is in Tokyo, Mitsubishi has set up a transmitter for low-level power devices such as laptops and PDAs and cell phones. And if you have the proper receiver on that equipment, you'll be able to power the thing strictly right off the air, whatever you receive that's being broadcast. So it has been done previously in small quantities. Our operation will be the first time that it will be done from space to the Earth.
And it will be a large quantity. 1 gigawatt is a huge... That's like... A nuclear power plant is typically 2 to 3 gigawatts.
And well, that's correct. And we will eventually be putting a large quantities in orbit and replacing huge quantities of power plants. This is something that we, you know, in America can build, and we can export energy to other countries as long as they build the receiving antennas and pay the bills. They're subscribers, just like a cable service from satellite to the ground.
So it's similar to, let's say, a cell phone, for example. If I'm subscribed to a service, wherever I have access to a satellite or to some kind of a transceiver, some kind of a transmitter of that signal, I have cell phone access, and I pay my bill every month, and I get that access. You're saying that this space solar power is receiver-dependent, and you don't have to necessarily aim the transmission at any particular spot on the Earth?
Well, in some cases that is true, but what we're aiming at is beaming the power directly to receiving antennas that are tied into the grid. So instead of building a local power plant, your systems would be simply a receiving antenna near the city.
Okay, so I didn't quite understand that. That's made it sound like the unit up in space is targeting a specific designation on Earth where they're transmitting the power. And then from there, you're receiving the subscription?
Yes, your subscriber would be the power or the utility company. Up in space, the satellite generates the power from sunlight, beams it to the receiving antenna on the ground. The receiving antenna is your power plant, and the local utility operates the receiving antenna and puts the power into the grid from there. So you get your power at home right out of the outlet as you normally do, but instead of burning fuels to generate it, it's being beamed down from space.
So that's phase one, is from space to a utility subscriber, a very large capacity. Would you see a hybrid approach? When I say hybrid, I'm talking about what you were mentioning earlier, the Mitsubishi transmission to cell phone users. Would you see that in the future you might be able to individual subscribers? For example, if I'm building a home on the top of the Alps, I could subscribe and receive power directly to that from your spaceport?
Well, it is hoped that that's in the future, and once we have proven the principle and gotten enough of the subscribers at the base load power level, yes, we do. We would like to see subscriptions to smaller users all over, whether it's an individual pocket-sized device or even a home some distance from the city. We want to be able at some point to eliminate a lot of the power wires that are out there, and I know that many of the universities have been experimenting with broadcast power and recently reached the benchmark, which is they passed the point where the receiving of that power was more effective than running through a copper transmission line.
And is this something that eventually we could use, if you can transmit from space to Earth, could you not transmit from, you're saying, from one Earth node to another Earth node?
Yes, you could. That's in the cards.
And why is that harder than transmitting from space to Earth?
Well, it isn't harder, but you use different frequencies and different hardware. It's a completely different principle.
Because of space to Earth is a direct shot. You don't have mountains and clouds and whatnot as much.
And that's part of the issue, yes.
And these frequencies are using, well, maybe we can get back into that after we need to go to break right now. But let's come back and talk about the frequencies and whatnot that we use for transmitting this power.
I plugged the ScanGauge 2 into my car in 10 seconds and could read my gas mileage instantly. It helped me save on fuel by improving my driving habits. If my check engine light turns on, I can figure out why without paying a mechanic. This device has saved me money.
The ScanGauge also provides information about engine load, ignition timing, and on my vehicle, it tells me the transmission temperature.
The ScanGauge is manufactured right here in Mesa. Call us at 480-656-3842 or visit us online at ScanGauge.com. Again, that's 480-656-3842.
Stylistics Design is offering free search engine optimization until Labor Day with any site. Are you a business without a website? Do you own a website that needs a facelift? Stylistics Design can help. We create professional websites that opens your company to the world marketplace. We'll build you a money-making e-commerce site and provide scheduled or immediate site updates. Visit StylisticsDesign.com or call toll-free 888-371-1682. Free search engine optimization until Labor Day with any site. Call 888-371-1682.
Do you need a new prescription for your life? Are you just not feeling well? I'm Dr. Asa Andrew, America's Health and Lifestyle Coach. Thank you for letting me walk with you on your journey toward extraordinary health. Join me tonight at 10 for Dr. Asa On Call, only on KFNX 1100.
Hey, KFNX listeners, this is Andy with Arizona Mist Systems. I'm no Picasso, but let me paint you a picture. You're on your patio, and it's about 100-something degrees. You push a button on the remote, and whoosh, a curtain of cool air surrounds you. In about 30 seconds, you're up to 30 degrees cooler. Now that's a work of art. And the first 11 callers get a free filter starter kit valued at $350. That's Arizona Mist Systems, 602-908-7676, 602-908-7676.
Don't miss Imus in the Morning, Arizona's news talk leader. Imus in the Morning. Only on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. The I-Man is back.
Free energy, now!
Sterling Allen coming back at you. I'm here in Eagle Mountain tonight. We're broadcasting out of from KFNX in Phoenix, Arizona, and we're talking this evening with Sir Charles Schulz III, and he is going to be moving to Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Now, I have to ask you, Sir Charles, where did that name, Truth or Consequences, come from? That's quite a name of a town.
Well, actually, it came from the television show that was so popular. This originally was named Hot Springs, and the town was actually, they voted on the name, because during the famous television show, one of the hosts said it would be interesting if a town liked the show so much that they would vote to change the name in support of it, and they did. So they actually have a Ralph Edwards Park here in Truth or Consequences, and I'm there presently right now. You know.
Okay. And when you say you're there presently, are you saying you have already moved, or you're there scoping things out?
I've already moved personally to the area, and I'm checking out all of the operational things we need. I'm working with the city council and the local government to secure the proper building. There's a really nice facility near the airport that may be in the future here. And we're just getting all of our things in line and making our deals so that we can open our factory and start hiring people.
And I have to ask you about this spaceport. I'm just curious. You know, I didn't get a chance to read through that article. But maybe could you give us just a quick thumbnail view of what a spaceport is going to look like? How you're going to have these super duper long runways, obviously some kind of a launch pad, different kinds of launch pads. What's it going to look like?
The runways are the whole issue as far as tourism flights go. There is a building that will be integrated into the landscape. It'll be real low slung, about 100,000 square feet, I understand. The facility itself is about 18,000 acres of protected land, and they try to not infringe on the wildlife habitats or do anything to destroy the environment. They're very, very conscious of that out here. The systems at the spaceport will be environmentally powered. They're looking at sun and wind to run the whole operation. And they have, of course, the very long runways. They will also have some launch pads in the area, and they've already done some launches, test rockets, student flights, that sort of thing. So we'll have the facilities at the spaceport once it is open for both runway-type flights to and from space and for standard launch pads.
So the vehicles that will take your units for this space solar system array, those will be launched by a private venture, and when do you expect those to take off?
Well, we don't really know exactly because we're still formulating the exact composition of the hardware, but we do know that some of the hardware will be launched from here. And my company is going to be producing a number of items, some of which will be used by Space Island Group and some by our own ventures. So because the spaceport itself still doesn't have all of its primary customers in place, the ones who will be using the launch facilities, those things are really unknowns at this point. Once we have some of the launch companies out here and once we've done some of our own hardware development, then we'll be able to tie down the actual launch vehicles and the launch schedules.
When we talk about commercial space operations, the thing that really comes to my mind is Burt Rutan, who recently made won the XPRIZE going into space with a commercial venture, and wasn't that the first? And now all this, now we're talking about an entire space port for a lot of similar type of operations. It seems like a big leap to go from previously it was just governments launching into space, and now we're going commercial. What's the transition there?
Actually, it was quite simple, and Burt Rutan was the one right at the lead because he built a vehicle called the White Knight, and he won the XPRIZE by carrying his spaceship itself on the carrier vehicle and launching it in the prescribed time. They made three launches and made three space flights, and they were suborbital, and they returned safely in every case. And that technology was purchased by Virgin Galactic, by Sir Richard Branson. And so he had larger vehicles designed by Rutan's team, and that is the White Knight 2 carrier vehicle, which will be carrying five people per launch, and those will be space tourists and the pilots. So, you know, it did develop completely from a commercial venture, a challenge, an X-Challenge.
And now just, you know, what is it, a couple of years later, we're now talking about this becoming a major operation?
Well, this is something that could have been done at any time, but you know, a lot of companies their backs were broken by Space Ventures because of the regulations and the cost of doing business. And as you know, many companies have actually gone out of the country to get launches carried out. You know, Robert Bigelow's got two space modules, really small space stations in orbit right now, and he had both of them launched by Russia because getting it done over here would have been roughly an order of magnitude more expensive, and it just couldn't have happened. So he's going to be putting his third up pretty soon. He's planning a space hotel.
But tell us, in terms of the logistics of a space located solar array, and are we talking a geosynchronous orbit, and how is that situated so that it's always in the sun, so to speak, or is it going to be shadowed by the Earth, and how much is it going to be shadowed?
Well, the primary test, the pilot module that's going up in 2010, will actually be in a low Earth orbit, and it's to demonstrate proof of principle only. It'll be 300 miles up. The secondary one that goes up, the 1 gigawatt module, will in fact be a geosynchronous orbit, which is 22,300 miles above the Earth. And it will be in direct sunlight something like 99.5% of the time, because you're far enough out from the Earth that the only time a shadow will fall on it is when there would be, let's say, a lunar eclipse. The time period is the same. So 99.5% uptime, 0.5% downtime, and if you have more than one of these in orbit, they can pick up the slack in between.
I would think that in terms of efficiency, you would want to have each one always in the sun.
Well, you do, but consider 99.5% is pretty good.
Yeah.
There aren't any real practical orbits that would keep the thing in the sun all the time and still be able to hit your targets on the ground effectively. That's
and the difference between that and a solar array on the Earth is that you know when the moon's going to be eclipsing it down to the second, whereas you don't know when clouds are going to be showing up on Earth.
Well, that's also true. And the other thing to consider is, on the ground, you get about 960 watts per square meter, just under 1,000 watts per square meter, and you only get about 8 hours a day. And above the atmosphere, you get almost 1,400 watts per square meter because the atmosphere is not thinning out some of your energy or absorbing it, and you're on 24/7. So really, a collector on the Earth only gets about 20% as much energy as a collector in space of the same size.
And you're saying the transmission of power via the microwaves is even approaching being more efficient than transmission through these high-tension, high-voltage lines.
Well, actually, that's a different system. What we're going to be concentrating on is the microwave transmission itself from space to the receivers on the ground. The systems on the ground that do point-to-point transfer have already surpassed wire efficiencies. They depend very strongly on extremely tightly tuned systems that match each other. They resonate over a distance, and they transfer the power that way.
Okay. And what kind of frequencies are we talking about in these transmissions?
Well, actually, it depends on the size of your receiver. They've done a number of experiments at different frequencies, and what they're doing right now is trying to avoid frequencies that will react badly with hardware, such as your computer or, you know, pacemakers. There are possibly wavelengths that could interfere by heating metal objects. So a lot of the research is going into making precisely tuned circuits that resonate at frequencies that won't mess with anything.
When you're talking about a gigawatt, that's a lot of power to be picked up and transmitted by anything. And if something is accidentally picking up that and harnessing that energy, you'd have meltdowns, wouldn't you?
Well, and you know, you can detect that. There are systems that can detect parasitic resonances or reception, and they're very good at detecting that sort of thing and correcting it. But again, you know, the one from space to the ground is really a very different system. And a gigawatt, that's easily absorbed by the antenna system. No problems whatsoever.
Give me coming to a break again here at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, I'd like to talk about kind of the IP question of who owns and who's come up with some of these components that are going into these systems, okay?
Sure.
Live streaming audio on demand, 24 hours a day. Log on now at 1100kfnx.com. kfnx.com.
See CNN Radio, I'm Greg Black. Michael Jackson's three children asked to see the singer when they were told that he died. But Ed Chernoff, an attorney for Jackson's doctor, tells CNN's Larry King Live the kids did not see the frantic efforts to revive their father.
I don't think so. They weren't allowed in Michael Jackson's room, and the doctor does not recall them being around while this was going on.
Looks like Bernard Madoff will live out the remainder of his life behind bars. A judge is sentencing the 71-year-old Madoff to 150 years for cheating investors out of billions of dollars. The Supreme Court rules that the city of New Haven, Connecticut, discriminated against white firefighters when it refused to give them promotions. It's the last major decision in this term of the high court. So far, no indication of any foul play in the Indian Ocean crash of a Yemeni passenger plane tonight. More than 150 people aboard that plane still remain unaccounted for. This is CNN Radio.
We could get our monsoon kicked into full gear this week as moisture moves back over the state. That means late afternoon or evening dust or thunderstorms for the valley, and most of the showers will still be in the mountains, but we will cool things off 104 to 106. Jim out. KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Currently, in downtown Phoenix, it's 101 degrees.
Are you living paycheck to paycheck? Have you been making credit card payments for years only to feel like the balance never goes down? In fact, with interest rate hikes and late fees, you feel like you are getting further and further behind, no matter how high your credit card debt is. At Jordan McKenna, we are not here to judge you. We are here to help you. Together, we can reduce what you owe and stop those harassing collection calls. We will even design an affordable monthly payment plan. You could save thousands of dollars off your high interest credit card debt. If you have over $5,000 in credit card debt, you could automatically qualify. Call Jordan McKenna now for a free no-obligation consultation. Find out how to reduce what you owe, stop the never-ending collection calls, and get out from under the mountain of credit card debt. For your free no-obligation consultation, call now. 800-308-9952. That's 800-308-9952. Don't miss out. Call 800-308-9952.
Tired of losing money in the markets? Tired of watching your retirement savings go down by the day? I'm Dr. Ron Caskey. I'm your safe money doctor. I can stop your losses, help you capture the upside of the stock market with no downside risk, sometimes give you a 10% bonus up front with a 10% guarantee on the income value on the backside. We need to talk toll free, 877-218-1972. 877-218-1972. Call me today.
Free energy now.
We really want to change the world today.
Eagle Mountain, Utah.
We'll always take donations, that's for sure. Or some hard work volunteering. Give a little and you get back more. You know the future's looking brighter. We just want to help the world today.
Free energy now.
That's the toll-free call-in number if you're listening live, 866-536-1100. We're talking tonight to Cyril Charles Schultz about some very fascinating solar technologies, and we may get a chance to talk briefly about some wind technologies in our last segment, but for now, we are talking about a space-based solar system that would transmit power back to the Earth, as well as a solar pod that uses Fresnel lens to generate some power via steam, if I understand right, which would then produce about 500 watts of electricity. This would be a modular system available in about 6 months from now for commercial purchase. And we will also be talking about a transmitting or selling of some of that power and arrangements with a utility system. Now, if I understand right, you were talking about selling the solar-based power to utilities on Earth, but there's another, is this a separate system where you'd be using your pod technology for utility-scale generation as well?
Yes, it would. The pod technology allows us to make systems small enough for even a camper to take out in the field and have power, or to even supply energy in third-world countries where it's very difficult to get reliable electrical power. You can gang them together, and as mentioned, it's a modular system, so you can power your home and even a small business with it. The orbital power system is completely different, but there is some discussion of using the pods, once they're space-rated, for use on space applications as well. The pilot that we send up is going to be photovoltaic. Later versions may very well be based on energy pods or a combination of the two.
Okay. So this one that's going up in 2010 is going to be photovoltaic technology. And how many watts is that one going to be?
I think that the original pilot is only going to be 12 to 15 kilowatts, just to prove that it works, you know.
Uh-huh. To be able to generate that much electricity and then transmit it to the Earth.
Right, and once they've built the receiving antennas and they've demonstrated that it does receive the power, then those antennas will be in place when the 1 gigawatt system goes up.
Now, would the 1 gigawatt antennas be larger, so to speak, or would they be the same antennas?
You can use the same antennas if you only need a limited amount of power. For powering the city, obviously, you'd have a much larger antenna, and that's the other one of the safety issues. We have the beam energy low enough so that it will not be dangerous to people who happen to get themselves in the way of it. Of course, just like any power plant, you'll have a no-fly zone over it. Power plants presently have no-fly zones for aircraft, and we'll implement the same procedures for the receiving antennas.
Right. And this no-fly zone, how much of a perimeter would you have around that?
I don't imagine it have to be very, very large. That's one of the details I don't have in front of me, so I couldn't really say. I wouldn't want to make a fool of myself and state something incorrect. But, I'm sure that whatever it's done, I mean, the FAA will have to approve it, and once they're sure it's safe, we'll be sure it's safe.
Now, 2012 sounds really ambitious for something this new, this different, and involving FAA and things like that. It seems like the red tape would be huge for something like that.
Well, the legwork's been going on for many years, and as you're probably aware, the original proposals for the technology were made back in 1970. And so we've had a great many years for the technologies to mature, for the technologies to refine, and for a lot of this stuff to be done already. There are signed agreements in place for everything at this point.
In the space module, what is it that Xenotech Research, your company, is going to be bringing to the table technology-wise?
Well, we've discussed a number of things, and I've signed some NDAs, so I can't say a whole lot, but part of it is in systems to move things to higher orbit without expending a lot of rocket fuel. Part of it is in generating technology itself, and one of the things we're looking at is some integration of solar and receiving antennas on the ground as well, so we can actually get power from two sources simultaneously.
Okay. Well, let's jump over now, shift gears, and talk about the pod, the 500-watt pod that's going to be going into production hopefully 6 months from now, meaning that people will be able to purchase these and start installing them 6 months from now?
That's correct. Yeah, the pods themselves, as I mentioned earlier, aren't very large, and the power capacity is limited because the smaller an object is, the more rapidly it loses heat. Larger objects retain heat better, and you get better efficiencies out of them. So 500 watts is, about the most reasonable we can get out of a pod of that size, 10 inches by 10 inches. The technology is basically a closed-cycle turbine with a working fluid, and it has a heat sink on the back side of the thing, and it has an aperture at the front where the light goes in.
And now, is this technology, it sounds like quite simple or basic technology, IP-wise, what has Xenotech Research or you in particular contributed to that technology portfolio?
Well, when we did the development, we actually looked at a lot of systems that were in existence, and we looked at things that were robust, but we also made sure that we didn't step on anybody's toes. And our biggest contribution was building and testing the prototypes. We had to make some changes because we had some previous agreements with a funding organization. And I guess it was really basically because of the economy. They didn't bring in investors and bring the thing to market at the time. We had to make sure we didn't violate any of our agreements, so it took some redesign to make sure that our pods would be completely different from what we were doing before. And really, the research and the testing, you know, that's where all your expense is. Doing the math, building the models, testing them out. So the next 6 months will see us integrating everything into a small package reliably and starting production of all the internal components. A lot of it's going to be off-the-shelf electronics, but there are a couple of key components we have to have manufactured.
When you talk about a turbine, are we talking about steam and water?
We're talking about a working fluid, and I don't want to give away too much.
Okay. And, yeah, Now, if we could, and I apologize if we're stepping into uncomfortable area here, just tell me if we are. In the past, you were working with Angel's Nest, and you had a number of people very supportive down there, and you implemented some prototypes there. Are they still involved with this process, or are we separate now?
No, we're not. The Angel's Nest has actually changed their locations, and I think they're in South Carolina or North Carolina right now. We're not really involved with the group there at all, and the original backing organization that paid for the big Fresnel prototype we built in Farmington is not involved in this project either. And I think that they had difficulties with backers because of the economy and some other things. And so, you know, we feel that this technology has got to be out there for people, and we had to be sure that we did this in such a way that we didn't, you know, step on anybody's toes. That's real important with us.
Right. Now, we've not given out the domain name yet. Xenotechresearch.com is your website, right?
That's correct.
And Xeno is X-E-N-O-T-E-C-H,
yes,
research.com.
Yes,
Are there any other domains that are relevant here, Space Island Group?
You can go to the spaceislandgroup.com page, and you can see much of the hardware that they've been developing and some of the agreements that they've made. And I think that would be very informative for some of the listeners, because they can get a better idea, if they're not familiar with orbital power systems, exactly what they're doing. They've got many, many things they've advanced, such as reusing empty shuttle fuel tanks as space station modules. And the Delta Clipper, the rocket that was developed by Dr. Gabbett's team that lifts and lands on rocket power, is actually the crew vehicle for the thing. And so you can carry anywhere from 10 to 40 passengers in the thing per shot.
10 to 40 passengers that would be going to the solar space module and back?
To their workspace in the space station they're building, or to the solar power stations, yes. This is one of the things that's going to help defray the cost of setting everything up. We can actually bring the cost of space flight down to a very reasonable figure, a lot closer to an airline ticket, because of the solar power generation and leasing space on the space stations that they're building. The issue is economics. There has to be an economy involved in here. You have to have an income stream. And so with the investments from the power companies that they're working with that are backing this, and with the investors who are buying space up in the space stations that they have, leasing space, they've been able to cover this so that the costs are absolutely covered.
Now, Xenotech Research, as the name of a company, how long has that been around?
Oh, gosh, let me think now. Back since about 92, I would imagine. I think about 92 or 93 I started the company.
Okay. And has it been pretty much Fresnel lens solar technology, or how many other areas do you get into?
Well, some of the earliest stuff I did was robotics and AI research, and I had a grant that covered 5 years of the work. And quite a bit of it was basically things like scanning for mines underground with sub-millimeter radar, and looking at water resources, having robots that would actually check water quality and relay that back to you from RF links. And after that, I started working on various small contracts and a lot of work basically in space research. When we got involved with the alternative energy such as wind and sun and water recycling, it was a little bit of a different turn, but it was an opportunity to apply some of the things I learned in defense and aerospace work to systems on the ground so we can make a little benefit out of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would think that the military would be quite interested in space-based transmission of power so that they don't have to have supply lines of fuel.
Well, that's exactly one of the biggest backers for the whole concept, and I believe that's one of the reasons we were able to get permission through to put an orbital power station up. Department of Defense was doing a great deal of studying over the last couple of years of the efficiencies and efficacies of basing their power lines in space, so they would not have to worry about supply lines being cut. So, you know, in a roundabout way, the Defense Department was actually able to get the rules in place and get the foundations in place for this to actually happen.
Doesn't that, though, get into our earlier discussion about the space transmitting to a particular spot on Earth, a utility, for example, as opposed to an Earth roving system that is moving around, subscribing to in other words, you've got to be able to target your transmission. How does that work?
Well, you know what? You can aim a beam anywhere you want, and if you have the receiver using something known as the pilot beam principle, it wouldn't matter whether your transmission was coming from a moving point in the sky or a stationary one. The concept basically is, using a pilot beam, the beam can't simply be aimed at a random spot. You have to have something in the receiver for the transmission to lock onto. So that way, you don't have a problem with the beam ending up just anywhere.
And where you've got clearances from the FAA for overflight and things like that, how does that work where you've got to have confidentiality in military locations and you've got a moving target?
Well, I don't know of any plans at this point for us to transmit anything to the military. I think really what we're doing is going to be the Vanguard, and then they'll know exactly how to make their systems fly after they see ours work.
I see.
That'll be their problem.
Will it be more of once you get it to the ground than transmitting from ground to ground?
I would imagine in the beginning it's going to be straight over the power lines like a traditional utility grid at this point. Later on, transmission.
Well, when we get back from break, let's talk about your wind power. You talked about the ability or some high-efficiency wind technology where you could bring the price down one-third of what people are paying for residential wind power right now. We'll get into that after we come back from break. How's that sound?
Very good.
And nagging. It's Dr. Lori.
You didn't want to cause problems. I'm sick of nice people saying that.
It's Dr. Laura.
You have to be willing to take the consequences. You have to be willing to stand by your values and the law. If you're not willing to do that, and if you're not willing to take the consequences, then all the kids are going to be driving like that, and nobody will do anything. And when they kill your dog, your kid, don't call me.
Dr. Laura.
You're right. I'm sorry. You're welcome.
Middays at 1.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, host of Helpline. Join me live to get your questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. Helpline, the world's leader in cell-resonant nutrition technology, delivers what others only promise, nutrition that really works. This month, Nano Green Tea Concentrate is on special. It supports the body's systems to manage free radicals, promotes healthy blood pressure and cholesterol already within the normal range, and healthy connective tissue, produced by beneficial probiotics. Organisms yielding the most biologically available polyphenols, which support the body's healthy anti-inflammatory systems. Nano Green Tea, nothing does so much for anti-aging, yet costs so little. Buy two bottles and get the third one free. Call 800-370-3447. That's 800-370-3447. Experience nutrition that really works.
Healthline with Dr. Bob Marshall every Saturday at 9 a.m. here on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
I plugged the ScanGauge 2 into my car in 10 seconds and could read my gas mileage instantly. It helped me save on fuel by improving my driving habits. If my check engine light turns on, I can figure out why without paying a mechanic. This device has saved me money.
The ScanGauge also provides information about engine load, ignition timing, and on my vehicle, it tells me the transmission temperature.
The ScanGauge is manufactured right here in Mesa. Call us at 480-656-3842 or visit us online at ScanGauge.com. Again, that's 480-656-3842.
Free energy, now!
Sterling Allen coming back at you. We're broadcasting live from KFNX in Phoenix, Arizona, and via stream link to the international community, whoever wants to listen in, and to many other people listening to archives. We're talking tonight to Sir Charles Schulz III, about his many different solar, wind, space solar technologies, among other things that he's been involved in. We can't certainly cover it all tonight, but we're trying to do the best we can to give you a thumbnail view. And we said that in this third segment, we would be talking about some of the wind technologies that they are pursuing over there at Xenotech Research. Their website is xenotechresearch.com, where Xenotech is spelled X-E-N-O-T-E-C-H. We also created a feature page for them. It's a new page over at PezWiki.com, and you can find a link to that over at freeenergynow.net under today's date, June 29, 2009. Again, Sir Charles, we are grateful to have you on our program. Let's talk about your wind technology.
Great. I spent the last 4 months doing research from the bottom up on windmills, and I like the vertical axis systems because you don't have to aim anything anywhere and you don't have to have a tiller on them. So starting from basic principles, I built four different models, four different prototypes, and tested them. And the last two I came up with I thought were real winners. It's easy to describe basically as an air diode, something that allows the wind to flow in one direction only. So no matter what direction your wind is coming from, this thing allows you to generate and harvest the maximum power from your wind because of the surface area it has. And on the return side of this vertical axis turbine we've come up with, there's very little resistance to the wind because of the way it's designed. I'm going to post some models on my page very shortly as soon as we get everything registered and we're safe to do that. Basically, we can cut the cost of wind generators probably from a half to a third of what they cost right now because of the huge simplicity of this design. And I've shown this to a number of people down here in the Truth or Consequences area, particularly some people I'm going to be dealing with, and they've been amazed by the thing. But I'll tell you, 4 months of research in this has been a lot of fun, and the yields have been immense. And I think that when you see what we've got here, you're going to love it. It's amazing to see. That's all I can say.
Well, I would say something really quick in response. When you talk about 4 months of research, typically people spend years and years doing research and development, but you get a smart guy who can basically put his brain to a concept, focusing in on it, looking at, you know, how can we fix this problem, you can come up with some pretty good stuff. I know for me, you know, I'm not a expert necessarily in any one area. We're always covering a wide number of free energy technologies, wind, solar included. You don't have to pay for the wind. You don't have to pay for the sun, so we call it free energy. And we also apply that terminology to other more exotic approaches as well, but certainly solar and wind are included. So, you know, I wouldn't bat you down just because you're a newcomer, so to speak, to this very old field. Many people might feel a little bit miffed that you're coming along and in 4 months coming up with something that might compete with them. But it sounds like you've got some interesting concepts.
Well, you know, never be afraid to try something that sounds crazy at first. You never know what you're going to find. And a lot of people will dismiss an idea because it sounds off the wall. But again, once you try it, you actually build the hardware and you test it. And the more radical it is, the more likely you're discovering something that nobody's looked at before. And that's the whole point right there. 4 months of undiluted, undisturbed research, you can yield all kinds of stuff.
Now, when you say undiluted, uninterrupted, meanwhile, you're talking about transmitting solar technology to Earth. You're talking about a solar pod. How do you have time to do it all?
Well, fortunately, a lot of that stuff has already, you know, the legwork and everything has been done. And at that point, I stay in the machine shop with the electronic gear and make parts and test things. There is a part of your mind that's always got things going on in the background. And I think one of the things with an inventor or a scientist who does this practical application stuff is that you have the ability to compartmentalize your thinking and let processes run on their own and then harvest the results. It's a different type of thinking. It's lateral thinking.
Okay. Now, what about investors? Are you a publicly traded company, or how can people, if they want to get involved on that level, how can they get involved?
We're not publicly traded at this point, and I am going to be opening up for investors. I'm actually talking to some investors right now. And, you know, I welcome people who are interested, and if they want to contact me through the website, we can discuss what we can do. I'm actually offering some equity positions to a couple of the investors, specifically because they're able to come up to the table with enough money to get this to happen quickly. And, you know, my idea is this technology isn't that hard to do. We've got to get it out there because we're not going to submit ourselves basically to being under the control of other people. If we can put these things in our homes and run our homes without a grid, then we're safe against national disasters or natural disasters, for that matter. And in my mind, you know, energy independence is economic independence, and it's actually, you know, it's national security. It really is.
I have to ask you on your Fresnel lenses. I recently visited a facility of another competitor technology that's using Fresnel technology, and their prototype system, they had these Fresnel lenses all over the place. They'd recently had a high wind, and obviously when you're talking about solar and wind, that's a combination that you don't want. You've got to be able to protect these Fresnel lenses from being shattered by high winds. How are you planning on protecting your Fresnel lenses that are pointing toward the sun and you don't want the wind to be getting in the way? What's your prescription there?
Well, actually, there are a couple of things you can do. Number one, when you put a system together that has Fresnel lenses, the larger the surface area of those lenses happens to be and the larger the aggregate happens to be, the more severe wind damage can be because there's nowhere for the wind to get through. You've got to put spaces between them for the wind to dump through, and you've got to do it in such a way that you don't obscure the sun. That's part of the issue. Another is you actually can use a metal grid above or below your lens to prevent damage to it because you're only going to take like a fraction of a percent of the area of the lens away by doing that. A lot of people are loath to put anything opaque in front of or behind their lens. But look at the area of that lens and the efficiency that you can focus all that energy down with. If you spend 1% of that area protecting it with a metal grid that can stiffen the lens against the wind effects, then you're way ahead of the game. The losses are well worth it because it protects the whole system.
I know in your earlier design you were talking about using the Fresnel lenses from television screens. What's your model now in terms of the sourcing and the production of your Fresnel lenses?
Well, the prototypes did take them out of big screen televisions. And consider now that most of those sets aren't even manufactured anymore. The companies that produce the lenses are looking for markets, and you can buy them directly from them at very reasonable prices. So, you know, our model has been, at this point, buy the lenses directly from the maker. You don't have to involve the television at all. That was just a really interesting place to find something unique, a gigantic lens. And now we simply buy them from the makers.
Okay, so it's still the same source, but it's not, you're not having to strip them out of an old television.
Oh, no. That would never be efficient for any sort of an industrial model. For a hobbyist, you know, or for an experimenter, that's a fine source because you don't have to go out of your way to get them. For manufacturing purposes, you make a contract with the guys that stamp the lenses out, and you get the batches of them very cheaply.
And the turbines, is that your design?
Actually, it was designed by a friend of mine who was a real aeronautical pioneer, and, you know, on our original prototype, he designed the turbine. The new one in our power pods is one that I've designed myself.
Okay. How many patents are involved in your portfolio?
At this point, we're not really going to say how many patents are involved in it. I've been told not to say a whole lot about some of the details, and that's one of the things they said, just don't say. I will say that we're involved in, we've got some non-moving part valves and switching in here, and that's kind of interesting, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. We've got about a minute left. Is there anything that we were just dying to say that we haven't covered yet?
Oh, you know, I expected everybody wants a solution for these things, for energy, and the real solution, obviously, for many people is to wait for the answers to come along. But some people have the drive to go out there and experiment and try things. Do that. Get your hands dirty.
1 minute.
It's the only way to know what's really going on in the real world. No matter what you read in a book, no matter what you see on television, the only way you'll ever really know is to build it yourself and try it.
A word to the entrepreneur, to the inventor, from Sir Charles Schultz. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you doing that, and we certainly wish you well in your endeavors.
Well,
again,
thank you.
The website, Xenotech Research, spelled Xenotech, research.com.
Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net, and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.
KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
News, weather, and traffic.
Cave Creek Phoenix, a division of Premier Radio Stations, LLC.